Good morning. Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Good weekend, guys.
Absolutely.
Spent a lot of time in front of a television?
Of course.
Somebody's phone is on. Is it mine? Don't let it be mine. Don't let it be mine. It is not mine. That means we're starting off the week correctly. What a weekend it was in the NFL. Cowboys, Colts, Chargers, all moving on. But we're going to start this morning, CC, with two words. Those words are Nick Foles. The Eagles' backup quarterback looking to keep the Eagles rolling against the Bears. Philly down 5 with less than 2 minutes to go. Foles, Alshon Jeffrey takes it down to the 2. 3 plays later. On 4th down, Foles to Golden Tate in the end zone. That's why you got it, Golden Tate. Eagles up 1, but the Bears weren't done. Mitch Trubisky finds Allen Robinson to get it down to the 35. So Bears would set up a 43-yard field goal for Cody Parkey. And Parkey, who had just made this right before the Eagles called a timeout to ice him, misses it. Upright, crossbar, miss. Off the post. 6th time that's happened this season for Cody Parkey. Heartbreak in Chicago as the Eagles win the game 16-15. They are moving on to face the Saints next week. Here is Cody Parkey on that season-ending miss.
That's the worst, one of the worst feelings in the world to let your team down. So I feel terrible. You know, I'm going to continue to put things in perspective, continue to just put my best foot forward and just sleep at night knowing that I did everything in my power this week to go and make that kick. And for whatever reason, at the crossbar and the upright, and I still couldn't do it. So, yeah, I feel terrible.
I draw my strength from, you know, those guys in the huddle, just look in their eyes, the belief they have, not only in me, but in one another. And knowing that, you know, this was a crazy game. There's a lot of adversity. I mean, this is one of the most hostile environments I've played in. You know, their fans came out, and, you know, we still had a lot of support here too. But it was, you know, I'll sleep well tonight for sure.
CeCe, we've been doing this show together for a year and a half. I can count on one hand how many times something in the NFL has actually surprised you. Did this result surprise you, Eagles beating the Bears in the way they did it?
The result didn't surprise me. I mean, the way the game ended with a kicker that used to play with Philadelphia and kick very, very well for them, and the number of times that he's hit some part of the goalpost this year, and for it to end like that, now that was surprising, that was shocking, but this Philadelphia team is very, very talented. Their offensive line played probably their best game that they've played in a couple months yesterday, and not just in the numbers. They didn't run the ball and dominate, no, but they were going against the best defense that I would call the most frightening defense in the NFL, and they took advantage of some of the replacement that they had in the secondary. So, no, I wasn't surprised. Nick Foles did a good job, and they had a great game plan as far as getting the ball out of his hand, spreading the ball around to all the different receivers, trying to attack all parts of the field. I thought Philadelphia and their staff and this team collectively, if you look at the special teams, if you look at the defense, and now look at the offense, we give too much credit to the quarterbacks. I know we do it week in, week out, day in and day out. There's no way that you have to be surprised. This Philadelphia team, because they're very, very talented, that they would be able to go to Chicago, the least experienced team in the playoffs, and be able to win.
If you would ask me before the game who I expected to win, I'd have said the Bears. I picked the Bears. I think we all thought the Bears would win, so that part surprised me. If you'd asked me 10 minutes into the game how confident I am the Bears are going to win, I'd have said not very at all.
Why?
Because the moment Philly took that first drive down the field, I know they didn't get a touchdown, but I thought that opening drive was incredibly important, showing they could move the football, that they were not going, they had a game plan for Khalil Mack, and it wasn't going to be we have to double team him every play. They did a good job on Khalil Mack, as they've done on elite pass rushers over the last 6 weeks, holding guys like DeMarcus Lawrence, Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, Khalil Mack, Ryan Kerrigan to a combined 1 sack and just 6 quarterback hits in 6 games against those guys leading into this game. Jason Peters did a good job. They did a good job scheming to where Khalil Mack couldn't wreck the game. And you saw, okay, Philly's going to be able to move the ball at least a little bit. If Philly's defense plays well and or if Mitch Trubisky plays poorly, this is going to be a tight game throughout. Now, with all that said, the Bears obviously could have won it. This is something where you've said many times before, it's things like this that make you, for lack of a better term, hate team sports. Like, now Mitch Trubisky gets labeled a can't win a playoff game. And I know he threw for 300 yards, but how many times did he almost throw the game away? And now he's 0-1 with a home playoff loss to a backup quarterback. But the narrative's totally flipped if Cody Parkey makes that field goal.
If he does his job.
Okay, yes, I know. You have no love lost for kickers that don't do their job.
I mean, besides his mom, his wife, or something, like, who is the day?
No, I understand. So if Cody Parkey makes his field goal, which is his job, understand, then there is no more Nick Foles discussion. There's no more Foles versus Wentz. All of it. And this is, by the way, and here's where the Bears, speaking of guys doing their jobs, this is where the Bears front office, which has done a tremendous job, has taken a little bit of ownership of this. Going into the playoffs, which kicker had missed the most kicks in the NFL? Cody Parkey. Who's a guy that, of all the kickers this week, and aside from maybe the Badgley kids in Los Angeles with the Chargers, that you had the least confidence in? Cody Parkey.
Four times in that Lions game this season.
Cody Parkey. But they had given him a big extension this offseason. It's probably one of the reasons they stuck with him throughout the year, when kickers usually, if they're having a tough season, they're just gone. And now your season's over, and it's an enormous squandered opportunity for the Bears. But credit to the Eagles. Fourth and goal, season on the line, after they get stuffed on the goal line. If there was ever going to be a narrative that made sense, it's the Bears' defense in a goal line stand. That's how they move on. And Golden Tate, a guy that the Eagles front office went out and got. He made a play, and Foles made a throw.
Yeah, Golden Tate, I want you to watch this route that he ran, because he knew they were running. This is the most famous route. Bill Walsh ran this, called quick right sprint team, R17, where you put two of your receivers to the field, you sprint the quarterback, and he's going to throw the ball on timing right in front of the pylon, and the wide receiver decides. Golden Tate knows that the DB has outside leverage. He looks inside as if he's going to run a route inside, and then snaps it off outside. That's the overall experience. A veteran wide receiver in a critical situation, a great play call, taking advantage of a young player who didn't have much experience. And that Chicago secondary, it came into the game banged up, all right, and the Eagles were able to take advantage of these reserve players that were in the game.
Look, you and I talked earlier, and I said, what do you think about how Nick Foles played? And you said, the Eagles team played very, very well. But when we use the word, and we laugh when we say it, but when we use the word magical in Nick Foles, things like what happened with Cody Parkey, that folds into this, whatever is surrounding Nick Foles and his ability to get the team to play and to win. So I do have to ask what you thought of the way Nick Foles played and what this now means moving forward.
I thought this was Nick Foles, individually, his worst game of this run, his worst game of the must-win games. They've now won 7 consecutive elimination games with Nick Foles at the quarterback. This was clearly his worst game. Now, it was also clearly against the toughest defense he's faced. The only thing that would be close would be the Vikings defense in the NFC Championship game last year, but that Vikings defense hadn't been playing as well as of late as this Bears team had. I don't assign the Cody Parkey miss to anything with Nick Foles' magic. I will say the offensive line continues to play its best football this last month. You see the Eagles secondary, which had been terrible throughout the first 3 months of the season, I thought played an outstanding game yesterday, aside from some dropped interceptions that could have made this game a more substantial Eagles win.
Play defense.
And so I don't assign much to the Nick Foles magic as far as how the game ended, but I mean, they now have an opportunity to go into New Orleans, a place that with Carson Wentz, this Eagles team lost 48-7 in a game that we thought ended their season. It dropped them to 4-6, and they were written off for dead. We'll see if it can continue next week.
Yeah, I believe in Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and even we'll put out money for the Tooth Fairy. Mr. Tickles even likes that. But as far as believing that Nick Foles is on some magic carpet ride, that's what got him through Chicago, no, I'd be a fool to believe it. I've been on too many football teams. It's a team sport, and this is what happened. The team supported their quarterback. He threw a number of balls that should have gotten intercepted. The interception in the red zone. He shouldn't throw that ball or throw it out of bounds. Now, the defender got a little bit on his hand, so the ball came up a little bit short. They react because they was reading his eyes. The young linebacker, Roquan Smith, he reacts and jumps on one of his checkdowns, intercepts that. So when you throw two two interceptions, ain't no magic carpet ride. You got to be supported by your team. And that's what this offensive line did. That's what the defense did. Their secondary played amazing. The Philadelphia linebackers played their best game of the season. So when you're talking about a man, Nick Foles, his performance, thank God he had that defense. Thank God they get that deflection on that last kick to take a little bit off that kick so it hits the post twice. So I believe in team, and that's what the Philadelphia team did. They supported their quarterback. I know we'll give the quarterback all the credit all week, but I'll try to balance it out.
And this is where the unfairness of one game samples and single elimination plays out. Like, there is no rhyme or reason that the kick the kid missed was the one that counted, and the kick he made was the one where there was a timeout. Like, that's a coin flip. There are so many things that are just absolute coin flips, and this one, once again, it came up heads for the Eagles, as it has seemingly every time during this run.
All right, the Philadelphia Eagles win the wild card matchup. They now move on to face New Orleans next weekend. Take a break. Coming up, what was the key to the Cowboys taking down the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next. This is First Things First.
Hey, it's Nick Wright, and we all put off doing things we know we need to do. We know we need to organize the garage, but something always gets in the way. Funny how home security can be just like that. You know it's a good idea, but there's always something holding you back. Well, now is the time to act, because SimpliSafe Home Security's extended holiday sale ends soon. SimpliSafe believes nothing should come between you and protecting your home. So they've gotten rid of the reasons not to get home security. There's no contract ever. No price markups from any middleman. No installation windows. Who's got time for that? Most importantly, their system is engineered to do one thing brilliantly, and that thing is protect. So if a storm takes out your power, SimpliSafe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. If they destroy your keypad or siren, SimpliSafe will still get you the help you need. Go to simplisafe.com/FTF. And listen here, order before January 8th is over to save with their extended holiday sale. That's simplisafe.com/FTF. Simplisafe.com/FTF.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Cowboys and Seahawks in a second, but first, Zion Williamson continues to defy gravity. The 360 dunk, the one he gave a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. If this is a 7 out of 10, an in-game 360 with his head above the rim, then what is a 10?
The reason why, because you can see his body is turned about a quarter before he even takes off. Watch his body. He'll be facing towards the sideline. You see that?
So it's a 270 instead of a 360.
Well, somebody do the math.
I just did it.
He knows it. He knows what he got to do. If he want to do a full 360, face the bucket, and then do it.
Bears, okay. Eagles, Nick Foles with the pass to Golden Tate, hey, who holds on despite a huge hit. Oh, the Eagles are happy they traded for him yesterday.
A lot of noise surrounding Golden Tate prior to this game, that he hadn't been as productive, that this was one of the midseason acquisitions where it looked like maybe the team trading the player away knew something the team getting him didn't know. He had two of the biggest plays, including the single biggest play of the game.
Cowboys, Seahawks, check out the stiff arm from Zeke.
And see, I know you love this, the heady play. This happened about 3.5 minutes left. Easily could have gone out of bounds. Cuts back inbounds to get another 40 seconds off the clock here with the Cowboys up 3 at the time.
Yeah, Zeke played a great all-round game, not only running the ball as a pass receiver, but one of the hidden gems when he was coming out of college was his ability to block. And you could see a couple times where they ran the quarterback, Zeke was one of the lead blockers, getting this guy on the ground. Physical game by Zeke. Talking about a guy who wants a new contract? Oh, and he earned one.
Same game, Cowboys threatening. K.J. Wright makes a great interception in the end zone for Seattle.
All right, see, I saw you tweeting about this. Is this one of those 60% interceptions that's on the receiver?
This is the quarterback's fault. The quarterback had plenty of space. He wasn't getting rushed. He should have let him so he can run away from the linebacker. It also should have been pass interference. Yeah. Now, a great recovery for an interception by one of the good linebackers that we have playing this game, but a number of things went, but it starts with the quarterback leading. Throw him into space, wide open. He'll run away from that linebacker.
All right, let's get full highlights from this game. Dallas, Seattle. There's Dak. Everyone expecting a lot out of him. Cowboys down 4 in the fourth. Dak Prescott with a nice pass to Amari Cooper. That's a 34-yard gain for Dak, his longest pass of the day. 4 plays later, Zeke runs in the 1-yard score. Dallas up 3. Fast forward, less than 3 minutes to go. This is 3rd and 14. This is Dak being all mobile and everything. Runs for the first down all the way to the 1. Next play, he would run it in for the score. And there it is. Jerry Jones, super fired up. Cowboys pull out the 24-22 win. Here is Dak Prescott after his first playoff win.
This team, everything we've been through, we had so much confidence coming to the game, and our confidence remains. I mean, we just played a great, great Seattle team. Just honestly, it's just all about the way we fought, the way we compete through success and adversity. Proud of our guys.
Can we talk about the way this guy fought on 3rd down, running it for 16 yards to get the 1st down and then set up the touchdown? I mean, what were you thinking when you saw him take off?
Simple. He's a grown man. That's what it is. That's how he played today, and he led us to this win.
All right, CC, bunch of happy guys right there. What was the key to the Cowboys beating Seattle?
I got to say Dak being able to run the ball in the 4th quarter, because to me that was the edge. When they had that 3rd down and extremely long, a lot of bad things can happen. The defense, man, you're playing into their hands. They got less space to defend. They're not worried about you running the ball. They actually hope you run it, so then you kick the field goal on 4th down. This is not a 1st down play. Brilliant call by them, but it was to try to get the ball for an easy chip shot. If they get the easy chip shot compared to a touchdown, then Dallas could very easily lose this game. That touchdown drive and converting right there was the biggest play in the game. And Dak being heady enough to be able to, man, because he had a point where he could have gone to his left or right. He read the blockers, knew he had the guards on the linebackers, and knew he had his running back, and he decided to split them and to try to make that attempt. A lot of quarterbacks, they wouldn't do that. A lot of quarterbacks trying to manage their overall health and everything. So for me, Dak Prescott and his ability to accept that game plan and to be able to run that football when they needed, that 3rd and 14 to me was the difference in a great football game.
See, it's not hyperbole to say it wasn't only the biggest play in this game. That is the biggest play by a Dallas Cowboy since Larry Brown picked off Neil O'Donnell in Super Bowl 30 to ice that game. That you might say, wait, how can it be 23 years since then? Well, think about it. They only won 2 playoff games since then. The one close call would be Terrence Williams' touchdown catch from Romo in their playoff win over the Lions. Like, this won them the football game. They were 1st and goal from the 1. Like, they're going to score a touchdown. They're going to go up 2 scores, and they're going to win the game. And if you're Dak Prescott, at least at this point in his career, and I think it's probably fair to say even next year in his career, he's not going to be one of the 5 or 8 or maybe even 10 best pure passers of the football. So the way he can create added value is things like this, is winning plays in the most critical moments. So like this touchdown drive combined with the 7-play, 75-yard touchdown drive to end the 1st half that got them in the end zone for the 1st time. Zeke had a huge 44-yard run on 3rd and 1 on that play where Seattle had everyone compacted and he bounced it outside. Like, those are winning moments. In a game that Seattle had a very questionable game plan offensively, Dallas took advantage, and they stuck to who they were. Zeke had 30 touches. Dak made the one mistake we talked about, but aside from that, played a relatively clean game, avoided the critical sacks that killed him earlier in the year, and in the biggest spot, made the biggest play of the year, not only for the Cowboys, maybe in the NFL.
And that's what Zeke is talking about. When he talks about grown, man, he's talking about making good decisions. Like when they came into this league, and they have been through a lot. They've been under the microscope a lot, and this is their 3rd season together. 2 postseason, but they were kids coming into them. Both of them have made mistakes on and off the field, some one for, and the other none. But that's what you expect on a Dallas Cowboy. When Jerry drafted these guys, he expected them to be in these big games, making those types of decisions and running the football the way Zeke did, because Zeke played like he was a grown man, and Zeke got it right as far as describing Dak and his decision-making in this football game.
Because Dak's numbers were pedestrian at best, but he found a way to win the game, which is all you can ask for in a quarterback, especially when you're looking at a quarterback for the future. On the other side of the ball, why couldn't Seattle pull this out?
If I'm Seattle and I'm Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer and I start rewatching this, I understand who they've been all year as a running football team. But part of the reason they've been a running football team is they've been dominant running the ball. Yeah, they've averaged 35 rushes a game in the last 13 weeks. But that was for 170 yards. They were averaging 5 yards per carry in that stretch. They called this football game. They would have called it no different if Blake Bortles was their quarterback. Throwing was a last resort at all times, despite the fact that A, you have Russell Wilson, B, Dallas's defensive front was playing a tremendous game. It was very clear by midway through the second quarter they could not successfully run the ball on first and second down. Yet they tried to call runs on first and second down the entire game. They treated a pass like it was only for emergencies. Fourth and six, I guess we'll let him pass. And not shockingly, Russell makes a perfect pass. Down 10, 2 minutes left. I guess we're going to, like, they. I think they're going to regret not using their all-pro level quarterback more in this football game.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you. And the reason why, coming into this game, we knew that was the same. Oh, if Seattle, they get behind, one thing we like about them is, oh, they're very patient. Oh, they'll stay with the running game. So now they've lost. So we're going to go back to the game and try to rewind it and be like, you know something? I believe they should be more aggressive. There are certain teams, Seattle being one of them, they only have a couple variances for which they can win offensively. And thinking that offensive line could back Russell up and pass 45 times, no. That defensive front was playing at a different speed. This was not a good matchup for Seattle. So I thought Dallas would take him out of their running game. But Russell being able to make one or two enough plays outside of, let's not forget the third and 14 we just saw. Mm-hmm. So if they settle for a field goal, how many plays does Russell need to make to be able to lead them back? So you can't just change your style in the postseason just because it's the postseason, because your team, you have to tell them during the week how we're going to play. And if you don't play that way, it's hard for the team to have confidence in the coach. Pete Carroll and them had a style. Be physical, Brian Schottenheimer. They tried that. They changed it after the first couple games. It's what got them into this playoff run. And we can't fault them because they lost the game in the style that got them there. Because, I mean, how do we ever critique the coaches? Because everyone is getting scouted. So they were able to dominate them on the front. And you got to give Dallas's offensive defensive line credit for taking them out of the game plan.
The reason I think it's fair to critique them is because we ask coaches to make adjustments. If you've got an offensive lineman who's just getting whooped the entire game and your quarterback's getting sacked.
But it doesn't make it better for him, Nick. As your coach, how can I make that guy successful? Backing those offensive tackles up against Dallas is not the way. And because of their lack of talent on offense, that's why they have less variables, less change of pace. They only got a fastball and a curveball. No,
I get that part of it. When I was saying if you have an offensive lineman getting whooped, I was going to use a hypothetical one that didn't happen in the game. If you have an offensive lineman getting whooped in a generic game and your quarterback keeps getting sacked, you either roll the guy out away from him, you chip the guy, you find things to adjust in game. The inability to adjust in game, that this running attack that has all year long worn people down, that has the last 13 weeks averaged 5 yards per carry, they had 20 rushes for 30 yards at one point in this football game. To not try the curveball a little more often, even if you only have 2 pitches.
But what is it, though?
What
we can't just make it up. Russell run the ball. Like if you would say, man, Russell, I believe Russell should have used his legs more. I would listen to that. But we can't just say, hey, they should change to.
Change to what? Change to absolutely the ball in Russell Wilson's hands with his ability to run or pass. I thought that was obvious. That's what I was saying. That the best player on your team in this, because they were playing to get exactly what they almost got. You're right about that. They were playing, hey, down less than a touchdown, 2 minutes left, see what our quarterback can do. I didn't think they had to play a game where it was in that position. I thought they could have scored more earlier.
I think Seattle, before the game, realized our offensive front is at a disadvantage going against their front seven. So how can I slow them down? How can I give Russell a chance? Russell was sacked one time. So they had enough plays. The defense has got to get off the field on that third down, and then that changes the argument. Russell Wilson and this offense, this offseason, they have to try to come up with some other things to make them more explosive, and they ran out of options in Dallas.
All right, time now for Put a Grade On. It's sponsored by CarMax. So Dak Prescott had a pretty nice day in his first playoff win as a Cowboy. Nick, put a grade on Dak Prescott's game.
That play right there gets you an A. I mean, that's if that was all he did the whole game, that play right there, that changed the course of the Cowboys season potentially, was the biggest play of the weekend. That gets you an A. So this is great easy for me.
Yeah, I'm going to give him an A plus. The Dallas Cowboys quarterback leading them to victory in the style for which he played. Hey, Dak, don't be trying to develop to be a drop back quarterback. Be a winning quarterback, and that's what he was able to get done in Dallas. That's why I give him an A plus.
All right, good stuff. Got to take a break coming up. Hey, how dangerous are Andrew Luck and the Colts right now? That's next on First Things First. On Sunday night, tune into FS1 for a big super middleweight title fight as Jose Uzcategui defends his belt against undefeated Caleb Plant. It is live. It is Sunday. It is 6:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. The Eagles' late touchdown gave them the lead with under a minute to play, and with the Bears trying for a game-winning field goal to advance, the whole city of Philadelphia was thankful for this one fan.
You gotta shank this show, bro.
Wait, he didn't even see. He thought it hit the crossbar, not even hit the bottom there.
It didn't even say it hit the crossbar. So if the city of Philadelphia is thankful for him, if that thing had been hooking right and then at the last minute his blow and that had made it go through, would they have blamed him? That thing was going right in the last minute, hooked through at the end? I don't know.
Awesome.
Fans are funny, man.
Thousands of videos just like that.
Oh, yeah, or people standing in their same seat wearing their hat a certain way. He had his rally cap on.
Yeah, Time for stories.
He's in after that one, I'm sure.
To start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. College football national title game is tonight, guys. Alabama and Clemson facing off for the third time in 4 years. Chris Carter, what's the key to Clemson upsetting Alabama?
Oh, you got to get to their quarterback. You got to be able to make Alabama, because now they can run the ball and they can throw the ball on an elite level. You have to try to take one of those away, and I believe affecting the passer with that defensive front of Clemson, this is going to be an exciting football game. No team in college football is more prepared to upset Alabama than the Clemson Tigers.
And it's going to be harder to get to the quarterback with their star D tackle out because of that suspension. Didn't hurt them against Notre Dame. It could hurt them in this game. I want to see, we've never seen Alabama play Clemson when Clemson has this type of quarterback, drop back, pure passer, and Trevor Lawrence. Very curious to see how Sunshine plays in this game, the freshman who they inserted into the lineup early in this season.
All right, to the NFL now. Ezekiel Elliott won his first playoff game over the weekend, but he's already got his sights set on payday. Reports are that Zeke wants a contract extension this offseason. Nick, should the boys extend him?
This is a no-brainer. Yes, absolutely. He could have had 30 carries for 1 yard in this game, and they lost, and they still got to extend him. He's the best player on the team, but he further solidified that with that spectacular performance yesterday. Yeah, look at the contract Todd Gurley got. Add about 10% to it. That's probably what Ezekiel Elliott's looking at.
Zeke's been special ever since he came into the league. He's led the league in rushing 2 out of his 3 years, and let's not forget the other year he was suspended. He would have led the league potentially in rushing that season. They have to extend him. Based on the precedent, too, set with Todd Gurley with the Rams. They gave him a contract early. Zeke deserves a pay raise.
All right, to the Eagles game. Nick Foles continued his playoff magic, beating the Chicago Bears. He found Golden Tate in the end zone with just under a minute to go. His fourth straight playoff win. See, how impressive was Nick Foles yesterday?
Nick Foles was impressed. I was more impressed with the Eagles and the team. So this magic carpet ride, Nick, I believe in the tooth fairy. If the tooth fall out, leave it under there. Oh, they fly. They still go through. They make deliveries and everything.
Oh, really?
But I don't believe in Nick Foles' magic carpet ride because I know football is a team sport.
Nick Foles, actually, this was the worst game he's played amongst the must-win games. But if the worst game you played includes a fourth and goal touchdown pass to win the football game, means you've been on one hell of a run. He now has the highest playoff passer rating in NFL history, passing Bart Starr for guys with at least 150 attempts. Hella company.
Yeah, that's not the best stat for your stat career.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it just,
it's
what
something.
Does it tell you?
It tells you that it's true. You can say it's a misleading stat, but it is a true
stat.
Very
misleading.
Okay.
On the other side of the ball, Bears lost this game on a 43-yard missed field goal. Tough way to end their season after winning 12 games and the NFC North. Nick, how much of a missed opportunity was this for Chicago?
Enormous. This is not overstating it. There is no guarantee this team is in this position next year. The best offenses in football, year after year are pretty consistent, barring an injury or a quarterback change. The best defenses in football, we typically see some turnover. Jacksonville and Minnesota, number one and number two in everything last year. This year, 6-8. Like, still good, but not overwhelmingly dominant. Additionally, Chicago, their D coordinator, Vic Fangio, he might not be their D coordinator next year. He could be a head coach next season. They were positioned home playoff game against a 9-7 team, and then they would have gone on the road to a Rams team whose coach and quarterback have never won a playoff game and who they dominated a month ago. They were positioned very well. We do not know they will be back in this position, and we do not know how this type of loss will linger. So it's a huge missed opportunity, and it's why that Cody Parkey kick is such a stomach punch. Like, the things like this, sometimes this is the closest you get for a couple years, and that very well could be the case for a Chicago team that I thought was really positioned well to go on a real playoff run.
There's no team in NFC North that matches up well, so I disagree with Nick. Lions don't match up with their front seven well. The Packers don't match up with them well, and the Vikings definitely don't match up with them well. They have a young quarterback who has playoff experience. His career is on the way up. The big stage wasn't too big for him. Their ability to be physical, so I do believe they do have a bright future, because what we've seen in these teams that have these great defenses, even though they change defensive coordinators, they typically play around that same level. So promising things out of Chicago, they shouldn't be disappointed in that terrible loss.
One moment from this game that I just want to mention, because we haven't discussed it. Everyone's talking about the missed field goal. When they scored their touchdown to go up five, that two-point conversion becomes an enormous play to potentially put you up seven. You've got to, as Coach Mangini would say, call your best, gotta have it play. And I'm not in those meeting rooms, but a play with Khalil Mack on the field as on your most important two-point conversion play of the year, it's very hard for me to believe that's their very best play.
The reason why we can't criticize it is because we have watched Chicago and Matt Nagy have all his defensive players, when they're in the red zone or at the goal line, we have seen him use so many different concepts. It was a good play. It was not blocked well. This was the way they did it during the regular season, we thought, in watching the Bears, because a lot of people don't watch the Bears. This is the style for which they play. We can't get to the playoffs now and just all of a sudden just start, oh, Seattle, they're running the ball. Russell's not going to throw it. That's why they had one of their most successful seasons. Chicago, they're in the red zone, two-point conversion. They're going to put in defensive players and come up with a creative play. That's what they did to get them there. People missed their blocks on the interior. There was a running lane. It was a solid call.
And that play, that solid call or not, that was a critical moment that it didn't seem like during the broadcast was taken as seriously as it should have been. Up seven there. I don't think the Eagles are going for two at the end if they're down seven. Right. And that field goal, I don't know how Cody Parkey feels nerves-wise if I miss this, we're in overtime, as opposed to if I miss this, we lose the game. That was a critical play in the game.
All right, let's move on to the other game. Deshaun Watson and the Texans hosting Andrew Luck and the Colts, and Andrew Luck delivered. First quarter, Luck to Eric Ebron in the end zone to open the scoring. Second quarter, Luck to Dontrell Inman for Luck, 222 yards. There's Dontrell. Two touchdowns. Texans tried to rally in the fourth down 14, but Deshaun Watson can't convert on fourth down. And the Texans are one and done this postseason as Luck and the Colts win 21-7. They've won 10 of their last 11 games. Here's the quarterback on the win after the game.
The message has always been, how are we getting better this day? How are we getting better this day? It's never been results focused. You know, we have goals, and we talk about those goals, but we realize it's all about what are we doing to get to that goal. And, you know, the cycle of the week, the cycle of the day, getting the most out of each other, getting the most out of yourself. So in that sense, it's been really fulfilling because we've kept getting better and better and better, and it's been very energizing.
Man, it was tough, but, you know, I'm not going to walk off that field with my head down. I'm going to keep my chin up, you know, keep my heart, light and warm, and just make sure that, you know, I remember this moment and, you know, go to work this offseason and, God willing, you know, have another opportunity next year.
All right, CeCe, let's start with the Colts. In your opinion, what was the most impressive aspect of their win?
I thought their game plan from the beginning, that they were going to negate that defensive front and they were going to attack that secondary. Man, they went after that secondary. T.Y. Hilton hadn't spent much time practicing in the last month, has been banged up. People had talked about the story before the game. No player in NFL history had the type of average that he had playing the Texans in Houston. So, man, they got him involved in the game plan immediately. And to be able to spread the ball around Andrew to all his different receivers, I thought their game plan going in there from Frank Wright was the key to that game, getting off to that great start and the physicality of, no, we're not going to back Andrew up 40 times, run the ball maybe 15. No, we're going to run the ball. Marlon Mack's ability to be able to avoid tackles, be an elusive, be a better runner than we anticipated him being in the NFL. Man, what a great fit with that new offensive line.
And the Texans were one of three teams in the league this year that hadn't allowed a 100-yard rusher.
Yes.
And Marlon Mack obliterated them.
Yep.
Like, Luck, if you look at Luck's stat line, if you watch the game, you know Luck was in full control. But he wasn't. This wasn't his best playoff game. This wasn't his best game of the season. Like, Luck played well enough because he didn't have to do too much because he was never under pressure, and they were getting 5 yards per carry. Marlon Mack was spectacular. The Colts defense, which this is where it's good to remind people, since week 7 in the NFL, the Colts are number 1 in the NFL in the following categories: record, point differential, defense, third down percentage. This has been a excellent team over now an 11-week sample, and they jumped on Houston from the opening kick, and this game was over midway through the third quarter, or midway through the second quarter, pardon me. It was 21-0. It was past the sticks time midway through the second quarter, and the Colts could just hold on from there.
With the way Andrew Luck is playing and what we saw from their defense and how well their defense is this Colts team the most dangerous team in the playoffs right now?
I think it's not the team that the Chiefs wanted to face. And it's not just because of Andrew Luck, but I believe that they can ball control. I believe that their defense, especially their back end, their secondary, has gotten so much better. We're talking about Frank Wright, who we had talked about the Bill Belichick way, is training camp's been abbreviated. You can't be as physical. You can't have as many two-a-day practices. You can't develop your team the way you used to. So now coaches are taking those first 4 games in September, maybe the first week in October, to develop their team. Frank Wright, this is the first time he's ever put a team together. Yep. So what he did, it took them more time. Now, they were able to be able to save their season. We haven't seen many teams get off to that type of start.
Yeah.
But with a young coach, with a young coaching staff, to me, they're the hottest team who played this weekend and the most dangerous because what that defense that people don't know and what they've done since that week that Nick
right,
said
since
being
they were
the best
one and
in
five,
the league.
Since starting 1-5 yes. since then.
You heard Deshaun Watson in the press conference. Very low-key, very even-keeled about the way this game ended. How do you think he played, and what do we learn from him in this game?
I'm not going to kill him for it, but the reality is the worst game he's played as a pro. I mean, that just – it was. I've watched every game Deshaun Watson's played since his second year at Clemson. And he was skipping passes. He was missing guys. Now, he was a man on an island. He was under duress. Nuke Hopkins, who's his only healthy weapon left, wasn't even healthy. Mm-mm. And they had no
his
running
His second
attack.
Option was hurt. His third
option was hurt. Their running game was non-existent. He was – if you take out his runs, they ran the ball 8 times for 29 yards. So he was in a terrible position. And so he should be even keeled. This wasn't on him, this loss. Bill O'Brien said – I told the guys beforehand, and you guys know I've been very critical of Bill O'Brien, I didn't get him ready to play. Here's what I know. Since Bill O'Brien's been the head coach of the Texans, they've played in 4 playoff games. A 30-0 home loss to the Chiefs, a 21-7 home loss yesterday, a blowout loss to the Patriots. Their one win was against a third-string quarterback in Oakland. I think it was Connor Cook. Like, this Texans team under this regime has never been ready to play opening kick of a playoff game. And yesterday, they showed a little life late, but the game was far too gone.
They can look across the field and try to get a blueprint for what Deshaun needs. Look at Andrew Luck. What do? They changed that offensive line. They changed their philosophy. They're going to support the quarterback with a running game, so I would look for them to potentially get another running back or two, and you got to support the offensive line. I believe if his wide receivers are healthy, Nuke was not healthy in this game, DeAndre Hopkins, and the other guys are hurt. So I believe that they can get this turned around, but watch the Colts. See what the Colts did and how much more physical they got on the offensive side.
To C's point about the offensive line and running game, they have a ton of cap space for the first time in a while there. You would expect them to be involved at least in Le'Veon Bell discussions. And last year, they didn't have a first or second round pick because of trades to get DeAndre and to get rid of Brock Osweiler. They will be able to actually upgrade the offensive line this offseason in the draft.
And for the Colts, it gets a little tougher now as they go on to play the Chiefs in Kansas City. Got to take a break. Coming up, how were the Chargers able to slow down Lamar Jackson? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Caney is here. What's going on, Chris? How was
Nothing
your weekend?
Much, Jenna's good weekend, wild yeah? card weekend, some oh. good football. So
yeah.
solid.
All right, you want to talk about some of it?
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Why don't we start with Phillip Rivers and the Chargers in Baltimore. All eyes on that guy, Lamar Jackson, in his first playoff start. Second quarter, Chargers up six. Lamar's pass picked off. Rough first half for him. So rough, the Twitter world begging for a switch to Joe Flacco. But the Ravens stuck with Lamar, who halfway through the fourth quarter, 3 of 10, 25 yards, zero quarterback rating. But in the fourth, Lamar found Michael Crabtree. Cuts the lead to 13. Less than 2 minutes to go. Lamar, Crabtree again. That made it a one-score game. This took a while, but touchdown would eventually be called. Lamar would get a shot to win it, but Melvin Ingram recovers the fumble, and this would end the game. Chargers win 23-17. Here's Lamar Jackson on his day.
We just played like we didn't want to be here. I did, not my team. I feel like I played poorly. You know, it was a lot of things, you know, we could have did out there on that field to put us in a better situation. Just got to move on now, get ready for next year.
All right, see, Chris Caney, how did they do it? How did the Chargers shut down Lamar Jackson yesterday?
Well, I think the Chargers did some interesting things on the defensive side of the ball, personnel packages. You know, they were missing Brandon McBain. He's dealing with a family matter, something going on with his daughter. And then, of course,
he's the big defensive tackle, which is typically a two-gap space mover. Has been a really good player.
He's one of the best run-stoppers in the National Football League. And then they were missing their second leading tackle, middle linebacker Jatavis Brown. So they had to be creative in terms of their personnel, and I think they had a lot of speed on the field, and they were able to neutralize some of the concepts that Marty Morningwig was utilizing Lamar Jackson in. So I think that was the big difference in terms of what the Chargers defense was able to do. Ball security showed up. I think that was a big issue. It's mm-hmm. been an issue for Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. 9 straight games with a fumble. That's something that has to be concerning, seeing as how he's the guy that touches the ball the most with that Baltimore Ravens team. So something that he's got to get cleaned up in the future. But I think the biggest issue going into that game for the Ravens offense is just the inexperience of the quarterback in the postseason. He's the youngest quarterback to start a playoff game in the National Football League. And say what you want, but if you haven't been there, if you haven't played in a playoff game in the National Football League, then you don't understand what the speed, the intensity, and the urgency is like.
Canty, were you guys concerned during around. The week? Because I had concern. I saw a soundbite of Lamar. And he said, it's just another game. And I was like, okay, I want to watch how that plays out compared to some of the other quarterbacks and what they were saying about the playoff and the speed of the playoff.
Well, I saw what you were talking about last week, and you're right. It's not just another game because it's win or go home. And so everybody is approaching the game with a different mentality. You try to manage that as best you can, but you do understand these types of games are just a little bit different. And Lamar Jackson wasn't able to adjust to the overall tempo of the game. You saw that. He wasn't getting the
Number
ball out on time.
Mm-hmm.
He got sacked 7 times. The turnovers, those things can't happen if your team is going to have a chance to win those types of games.
There was 2 things from an inexperienced standpoint I was worried about going into the game. I was worried about Anthony Lynn, his lack of being a coordinator, and him lack of being a head coach in his first playoff experience in his second year. But because he's got Ken Whisenhunt on the offensive side, former head coach, and he's also got Gus Bradley, former defensive head coach. But on the defensive side, Gus Bradley came to him early in the week after experimenting with some things in walkthrough, saying, I believe we should play 7 defensive backs. And the only reason why he's able to do that was, you mentioned the injury, especially inside linebacker. But they got a special talent in Derwin James.
Yes.
And his ability to be able to play in the box like he did Florida State. Now, there's only one reason why I compare him to the late, great Sean Taylor, and it's because he has such versatility, he's got such speed, he's such a great tackler in space, and Gus Bradley coming up with this new wrinkle that we hadn't seen in the NFL. It was kind of like Tim Tebow when he won his first playoff game. The Pittsburgh Steelers hadn't seen him yet. This Chargers team, they were able to see Lamar for the second
just
time,
saw him, yeah.
And them making that adjustment, I thought, was the key to the game. And not only did they play 7 defensive backs, but watch how many times they played Ingram and Boza on the inside, yep, in that guard tackle gap where they were able to utilize their quickness, where typically you got a space eater in those positions.
So a number of really key points that you mentioned. One, this is the first time in Lamar Jackson's career since at least high school and maybe before that a team's played him twice in a year. So they got to see him, and then they got to adjust from there. Secondary.
And a couple weeks ago.
Right, I mean, absolutely. It was very recently. Yeah. So that never happened in Louisville. It hadn't happened in the NFL because he took over midway through the year. So those divisional opponents, he only played them one time. The other part, Derwin James, a guy whose name we talked about before they played the first time. The reason you can play seven DBs is because they were kind of at some points playing six DBs and one linebacker, but the linebacker was their safety, Derwin James, because he can do it all, first team all pro as a rookie. And the other point, and see, this is something we talked about before the show, because you would think, I think most football fans would say, okay, if I'm playing a team that is limited passing but is dominant running, I want more big people rather than more small people. Mm-hmm. They went with speed over strength, but that can only work if their defensive line makes sure the offensive line is not getting to the second level and obliterating all the corners they have on the field blocking, right?
That's why they came out in a reduced front, right? They had 2-3 techniques and a zero nose. So, yeah. I mean, you can do those types of things. You can keep the guards in the center from climbing to the second level if you've got guys on top of them. And I think that's exactly what they did. Another guy that the Los Angeles Chargers used in the box, Adrian Phillips. We got to give him some love, too, because he played big yesterday as well. Came up with that interception in the first half, which was a huge play. But, I mean, for as well as the Chargers' defense played, the Baltimore Ravens' defense played equally as well.
Yes,
I mean, they had a couple of sudden change situations in the first half. I mean, Kenneth Dixon fumbles the ball. The Chargers get the ball in point-blank range. They get a tackle for loss on third down and hold them to a field goal.
And they blocked a field goal. They blocked a punt, did the Ravens.
That was in the third quarter. You had two blocked kicks and a fumble recovery, and you only get three points out of that?
Yeah, it was killer.
I mean, if that's the case, if that's what's going to happen, then you're not going to have a chance to win that game.
But obviously one of the big themes throughout the game was when you start hearing the fans and the Twitter world and all of it calling for them to change to Joe Flacco. Where do we fall on that?
Listen, can I just remind everyone what Joe Flacco, Super Bowl winner Joe Flacco looked like in his first playoff start? Put it side by side, Joe Flacco versus Lamar. Now, the only difference between these two games, aside from the fact Lamar had a nice run in the fourth quarter, is Flacco actually got a quarterback win for that start. His year two for Joe Flacco, he got a road win against New England, 33-14, with four completed passes and 34 yards passing. Like, this is why the quarterback wins thing can be misleading. And the idea that Joe Flacco, I watched him play this year, the idea that he all of a sudden was going to come in and lead you from three scores down, that he was going to be the cure-all, doesn't exist.
I don't think they were calling for Joe Flacco because they all thought Joe Flacco was the better quarterback, but maybe that they needed a change, that the game had gotten too big, the stage was too large, the lights were too bright for Lamar Jackson.
I think Lamar fumbled the ball in the first quarter three times. Mm-hmm. So sitting there saying, anybody thinking about Joe Flacco is crazy? No, you're watching a football game, and this is the stage too big for this kid who is the youngest, who turns 22 today. The stage did look too big for him. He began to shrink. As the playoffs went up, he began to shrink, and he was having a hard time with just your basic throws. When you run an out and he bounces the ball on two bounces to the wide receiver, it is in the books that you should look to a veteran quarterback. So thinking that the fans and everything were crazy this time, no, they weren't. Lamar was playing that bad that you had to consider it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to consider it, but you also have to think that it could affect the confidence of your young quarterback moving forward.
And that's why
we know that confidence is important to the development of young players, but especially at the quarterback position.
All right, we've got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, how was Nick Foles able to keep this playoff run alive? That's next on First Things First.
Come on.
Back here with Chris Caney, we're going viral. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys took care of the Seahawks on Saturday to advance to the divisional round. I guess you could say Cowboys fans were excited to get into the stadium, literally. Jerry World flooding with Dallas diehards trying to get the best spots in the standing room only section. There's something slightly unsafe about that.
That looks a lot like a lot of college basketball arenas where all the student section is all first come, first serve. People line up and wait and then trample each other running in.
Or it looks like a Target on Thanksgiving morning.
Oh, day after Thanksgiving.
Black Friday. Yeah. Boy, I had that one.
Doesn't look safe, though, Jenna.
Man. No, nothing looks safe about it.
There's some. Go ahead. Steve.
Looks like every day in the life of a black person to me.
Run it. The book. Yeah.
I know you ain't got nothing to say. Go to the next one.
Yep, wow. Nothing. And it's better that I don't. Back to the Eagles looking to keep rolling against the Bears. Philadelphia down 5, less than 2 minutes to go. Nick Foles finds Alshon Jeffrey to take it down to the 2. 3 plays later, 4th down, Foles to Golden Tate in the end zone, and that is why you got Golden Tate. Eagles up 1, but the Bears weren't done. Mitch Trubisky to Allen Robinson gets it down to the 35. Bears would set up a 43-yard field goal for Cody Parkey. And Parkey, who had just made this right before Eagles called a timeout to ice him, does not make this one. Off the post, the 6th time that has happened this season, 6. So it is heartbreak in Chicago this morning as the Eagles win 16-15. They'll face the Saints next week. All right, Chris, how surprising, in your opinion, was this result and the way it happened?
Very surprised, just because the Chicago Bears defense had been one of the most consistent units that we've seen in all of football throughout the season. And they showed up again yesterday. They held the Eagles to 16 points. You would think that if you hold the opposing offense to 16 points, that that would be good enough to win a playoff game at home, especially when you have a +2 differential in turnovers. Yeah. But guess what? The Chicago Bears offense, they didn't make enough plays to win the game. I know it's a different conversation if Cody Parkey makes that kick, but he didn't make that kick. So we have to go back and look at the missed opportunities that that Chicago Bears offense had. Mitch Trubisky made some big-time throws at the end of that game. That back shoulder on the 7 route to Allen Robinson, that is a big-time throw. We haven't seen a lot of throws by him like that outside of the numbers down the field. But when you look at Mitch Trubisky on third down passing, Mitch Trubisky was, I think he was, what, 6 of 11 on third down in passing, and they only had 3 conversions passing the ball on third down. They were 5 for 16 on third downs throughout the entire game, 0 for 3 in the red zone. Those are a lot of missed opportunities.
That 0 for 3 in the red zone was huge.
Yeah.
They 3 trips to the red zone, 3 field goals in this game.
Okay, but
that's
but
a
Matt,
killer.
But Matt Nagy doesn't call a single pass play?
He doesn't
call a single pass play?
Right.
I mean, so that's the head coach telling you how he feels about his quarterback. And, again, I keep coming back to this. In the playoffs, you have to have somebody that can make plays from the pocket at that position. If your quarterback can't consistently do that, then you can't take advantage of scoring opportunities, especially when your defense gets you extra possessions.
And one of the things Mitch Trubisky's been good at this year is making plays with his legs. And it looked like early in the game he tweaked something, either hamstring or quad. I know Matt Nagy said at halftime, he said, I told him I'm going to give you the full playbook. If you're good to go, you're good. I'm going to treat you as such. But he was not as much of a threat with his legs. But this was also a story of Fletcher Cox, who just won Defensive Player of the Week, having another dominant performance. And Eagles secondary, which has a lot of, wait, who's back there, guys? Playing the best they've played all year. And credit to Jason Peters, who was one-on-one with Khalil Mack a lot of the night. And when Khalil Mack wasn't lined up on his side, the Eagles' offensive and the offensive line and scheme did a great job of neutralizing Khalil Mack to where he had 0 sacks, only 2 quarterback hits in the game. But that's part of a trend of what the Eagles have done over the last 7 games. They've faced Ryan Kerrigan twice, DeMarcus Lawrence, Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, and Khalil Mack. In those 7 games, those guys have 1 sack and 6 quarterback hits. They haven't let a dominant pass rusher dominate them. All of those things set the table for what you were calling the Nick Foles magic, which is, oh, we're down 5, 4th and goal? No problem. Golden Tate, and see, I know you love the route Golden Tate ran, but Golden Tate to win the football game right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team sport. The team played well. The Eagles have played great as a team to help support their quarterback. This was, as you said, Nick Foles' worst game in this run that he has been on, but their offensive line play is back to being dominant. So Jason Peters and the rest of that offensive line, because when you talk about the last 6 or 7 games, they face these guys with double-digit sacks. It gives the quarterback a lot of confidence. So Nick Foles, part of the magic carpet ride is he realizes that offensive line is going to support him. He's going to have time to throw the ball. And Nick Foles has great anticipation and great timing that he's not going to sit back there and hold the ball in the pocket. So the line playing well and Nick Foles' attitude and the play calling all matches up for them to be successful offensively.
But Chris Caney, no one wants to use the word magic, and so we won't. I mean, the Eagles still won with Nick Foles as their quarterback. Not many people had them beating the Bears. Not many people had them even getting into the postseason. And now they're actually on a pretty decent run with a team that's playing very well as a whole. Is there a way to explain the fact that they're playing their best football with this guy at the helm?
Well, I mean, listen, they've been there and they've done that. They had the experience. Now, this is a little bit different than what we saw last year because now they're on the road. But having the confidence to draw from your performance last year, I think that bodes well for this team moving forward. And you saw that on display yesterday, especially in the critical phases of the game. That last drive by Nick Foles, a 12-play drive where he had six completions in that drive. I mean, that's Nick Foles drawing on the experience that he has and having the confidence to execute the offense. And you saw those players in those situations that fourth down play to Golden Tate right there at the end zone. You saw that Golden Tate knew exactly what he was supposed to do and was able to create some separation. The quarterback got him the ball, and he literally threaded the needle on that throw. That was a really special throw. But again, those guys didn't panic in that situation, and you have to be able to have that ability to be able to slow the game down, especially in playoff football, so you can execute at the highest level.
But this is why when people bring up, when we're talking about all-time quarterbacks, we're talking about contemporary quarterbacks, the quarterback wins stat, I get so agitated. Because now Mitch Trubisky's 0-1 in his career in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens next. He lost as a home favorite, and he didn't play any better or worse if Cody Parkey makes that field goal. Nick Foles continues on this run, and we can call it magical, whatever it is. He didn't play any better or worse if Cody Parkey misses because he missed that field goal. And see, this is where you say, and it's so funny to hear you say it, because obviously this is where you made your money and made your name. But you say this is the part about team sports that you can't stand, is that everyone can do their job however well they do it, and then it comes down to one guy who doesn't do his. And in this case, it's a kicker, the one guy who's the least amount football player on the team. And now careers are different. We don't know. Chicago might not have Vic Fangio next year. Like, we don't know what the story is going to be for them, all because they missed a kick. And, like, that now goes on Mitch Trubisky's resume. It goes on Nick Foles' resume, even though they didn't earn that.
Yeah, I don't have love for kickers. Tom Brady and them, they got love for kickers because they always make them.
So, kickers aren't football players.
As you see, when he missed that kick, there wasn't the whole team coming over to love on him. One offensive lineman patted him on the head, was like, oh, it's okay. But everyone else was like, do your job.
I feel bad for him. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, you got to hear what Ezekiel Elliott had to say about Dak Prescott. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Chris Kenny, we're going viral. Ravens showed up to their wild card matchup against the Chargers in Halloween masks. But L.A. wasn't scared, handing Baltimore the loss on the field. See what I did there? Off the field, trolling them with the crying Jordan treatment.
Wow.
From the official team account.
Savage. Savage.
Now, those are defensive linemen, right? Those defensive players. Yeah. Offensive guys, you can't come to the stadium with a mask on.
Well, T.Y. Hilton did.
Well, no, that's because someone said that, that's clown. Yeah. Okay, yeah, he did that in response.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but the joke was on people. Jonathan Joseph, well, as we
no
found out.
Yeah. There's just no doubt about that. That's a defensive maneuver right there.
That's a defensive maneuver.
Right?
The shade. Chris, I listen, for all my time I've known Chris, Chris has no prejudices or biases that I can tell.
Except
for against defensive football and players and NBA players being soft. These are the two stereotypes you buy into. You don't buy into any racial.
Bro, just my history tells me that. My history tells me guys in the NBA, not this generation of players, are not physical and definitely don't want to fight. And I spent 16 years in NFL locker room, more years covering it. Man, it's a bunch of dumb dudes.
Come on, CeCe. Come on,
CeCe. The defensive side of the ball.
Come on, CeCe. I'm here
doing
the show with you.
Do you realize he's sitting right next to you?
I got Hall of Famers texting me all the time.
Right next
see?
To you.
Yeah,
he don't care.
He don't care nothing about that.
He's not one of them. I'm no fool. He's too big for me to call him dumb up in his face.
But when he leave, though.
Well, exactly.
He's from Virginia, man. He's a smart one.
He's a smart one.
He brings the GPA up on the defensive side.
Oh, come on.
All right, next segment, we'll hear what you really think about kickers. Back to the Cowboys and Seahawks. Here we go in this one. Dallas down 4 in the fourth quarter. Let's get it going, Dak Prescott. Nice pass to Amari Cooper, 34-yard gain for Dak. His longest pass of the day. Four plays later, Ezekiel Elliott runs in the one-yard score. Dallas up 3. Fast forward, less than 3 minutes to go. 3rd and 14, probably the biggest play for Dak right here. Runs for the first down all the way to the one-yard line, making the winning plays for his football team. Next play, he runs it in for the score. He is fired up. Cowboys are fired up. Jerry Jones is fired up. Cowboys pull out the win 24-22 over the Seahawks. Here's Dak Prescott after his first playoff win.
This team, everything we've been through, we had so much confidence coming to the game, and our confidence remains. I mean, we just played a great, great Seattle team. Just honestly, it's just all about the way we fought, the way we compete through success and adversity. Proud of our guys.
Can we talk about the way this guy fought on third down, running it for 16 yards to get the first down and then set up the touchdown? I mean, what were you thinking when you saw him take off?
Simple. He a grown man. That's what it is. That's how he played today, and he led us to this win.
All right, so we've established they are adults that play. That's what he meant to say. I'll just translate for him there. All right, Chris Kenny, what do you think was the key in this one? How did the Cowboys beat Seattle?
Well, it ain't complicated, Jenna. It starts with the run game, and that's both sides of the ball. I mean, defensively, the Dallas Cowboys defensive line did a good job of playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage. Those guys up front, DeMarcus Lawrence, Malik Collins, Tyrone Crawford, Antoine Woods, all of those guys had tackle for losses. So that tells you that those guys did a good job of disrupting the timing of the run game. A lot of stop and start by Chris Carson in the backfield, and it's hard to get the running game going. I think they finished with 70 yards rushing on the season. They were averaging 160. So if you could slow that Seattle Seahawks offense down by stopping the run, I think that bodes well for you defensively in terms of trying to contain them and limit scoring opportunities. Offensively, you saw what Ezekiel Elliott did by halftime. 17 touches for 123 yards from scrimmage. I mean, they were running the offense through Ezekiel Elliott. And when it became winning time in the fourth quarter, we saw Dak Prescott step up and make some plays, particularly in the red zone. He had two critical runs in the red zone to set up those touchdowns. Of course, we know the one at the end of the game was aided by the two penalties to keep that drive going. You had a DPI by KJ Wright, and you had a DPI by Coleman, and that allowed them to continue to move the sticks. And then, you know what? When they got into the scoring area, Dak Prescott was aggressive. He took advantage of the opportunity when it presented itself on that third and 14. And ultimately, when your quarterback is making those types of plays, and then your offensive and defensive lines are dominating the way the Cowboys did, you're going to have a good chance to win a playoff game.
Now, two of these four games were won not just because of the running game, but a small little point. Tavon Austin flipped the field a couple times. Those 74 yards that he had as a returner in the Baltimore game.
And he had one taken away. Yeah, a touchdown could have really changed that.
Yeah, so in these games that defenses were dominant, not like the beginning of the first few months of the NFL, we could see special teams, Tavon Austin, those extra yards to create that field position that Dallas could play. This connected game where they could depend on their special teams. They could depend on their defense. And when it was late, they could depend on their quarterback. And I just like the fact that everyone is not going to be a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees type quarterback. And I just have a great deal of respect for those quarterbacks who aren't those guys, but they develop a style for which they can win games. Ben Roethlisberger has done it at a high level. He's a totally different quarterback. He came into the league very one-dimensional. You couldn't depend on him. You had to play strong defense around him. He had a limited passing game. Now he's grown into one of the most prolific passers that we have. Dak Prescott, man, be who you're supposed to be. And in the biggest moments, third down, fourth quarter, that's when you could see him running the football. So Scott Linehan's buy-in, Jason Garrett in designing these quarterback runs that I thought third and 14 here. This is not a third and 14 play, but halfway through this, they had it blocked perfectly. Dak Prescott made up his mind to put his cleats in the ground and not just protect the football, but I'm going to be aggressive and try to go get this first down, which led to a touchdown. So for me, those were the differences in this game late. Because what am I expecting? I'm expecting Russell Wilson to make some kind of play with his arm or legs. Who makes this play? Dak Prescott makes it, and I believe that was the biggest play, not only of the weekend, but the biggest play of his career.
The biggest play of his career, and I said earlier, I'll say it again, it's the biggest play a Dallas Cowboy has made since Larry Brown intercepted Neil O'Donnell late in the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 30. Like, they've only had a couple other playoff wins. You could argue the Romo had a touchdown pass, Terrence Williams in their most recent playoff win, but this was the biggest play. And can we show it again? Because look at who Dak runs through. That's the best middle linebacker in the NFL. That's Bobby Wagner, a guy who is on a Hall of Fame track, just made first-team All-Pro again, a guy who in his career in Seattle misses less than 1% of his tackles. And I don't know if this counts as a missed tackle, but it's close. And if Dak gets tackled there, if Wagner makes that play, they are kicking a field goal, 100%. They're not going for it there. They're kicking a field goal, and now we're thinking it's Russell Wilson time. It's down six, even without the kicker, like whatever it is, down six with the ball outside of 2 minutes. Seattle had one timeout. Okay, let's go see what we can do. And that play by Dak changed the trajectory of the game and maybe changed the trajectory of this NFL season.
And as an NFL player, there are plays that happen, and they don't happen in real time for you. They happen in slow motion. And you have to make up your mind in that fraction of a second that I'm getting ready to make the more dangerous of these plays. And that's what Dak was able to do. Canty, you're agreeing with it because as a defensive player, there are certain times you have certain stunts and you see something and you believe it and you have to make that call. And that, to me, was a Dak who had made up his mind compared to some other times where he didn't run with that type of fervor that we saw him finish off that run with.
No, you're absolutely right, CC. It's a certain mentality that you're talking about, and I'll take it a step further. Sometimes it's not in the game. Sometimes you make up your mind to do that in the preparation in the week leading up.
Okay,
and you're
yes.
thinking about it, and you're saying, you know what?
It's going to be one of
if the situation presents itself, I am going to react this way. And that's how you practice. That's how you prepare when you're going through your film study. So when you have those show up, you're prepared to execute in those moments, especially when you're talking about postseason football, because it's a different brand of football. It's more physical. It's more intense. And it was clear to me that Dak Prescott, unlike the other young quarterbacks that we saw this this weekend, was prepared to make those plays and had the confidence to be able to do so. And that takes you back to what happened in Week 17 with the Dallas Cowboys and Jason Garrett's decision to play Dak Prescott.
Great
that,
point.
That's the dividend, right?
Okay.
That's exactly why Jason Garrett
I
made
didn't
the decision
even think of that.
To have him in that game when he sat Ezekiel Elliott. Both of those moves
paid off for
Jason
Garrett. And that was a risk by Jason
Garrett.
Because if Dak plays poorly in that game without his all-pro offensive line, without his all-pro running back, he's going into these playoffs as low as you can confidence-wise. Instead, he came in off his best game of the season. Quickly, one note on why this win, the way they won it, was so important. Everything they did, I think they feel, is duplicable next week because they didn't get outlier performances. Yeah, Zeke was great. He's the best player on their team and the best running back, true runner of football in the NFL. Amari, he's the guy who had 100 yards receiving, not Blake Jarwin, not Cole Beasley.
Right.
Dak didn't make where he's threading the needle. No, Dak did enough. And they've been 25-1 in Dak's career when he doesn't turn the ball over. He did turn the ball over, and they won despite that, and the defense was spectacular. All those things, you look at, okay, we won a game being exactly who we are. That gives you enormous confidence when you're now going to be an underdog next week on the road.
All right, and they will face the Rams. Chris, stick around. Coming up, the Nick Foles magic rolls on. That's next on First and First. Andrew Luck and the Colts in a second, but first, Zion Williamson continues to deny gravity. The 360 dunk, which Nick, he said, you know what, that was just like a 7 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, probably. See, what would have made it a 10 out of 10?
You got to be facing the rim when you start the initial takeoff. He cheats it a little bit, goes a little sideways.
So that's like a 270 instead of a 360.
Slacker.
But this, I mean, his head up to the rim. In-game dunk, about as good as it gets.
Yeah, nasty.
Bears-Eagles, Nick Foles with the pass to Golden Tate, who holds on despite the big hit.
Amazingly, this was only the second biggest play Golden Tate made in this football game. That is a tough football player, not afraid of contact on a huge third down in the game.
The last several weeks, people have been questioning Howie Roseman, man, his judgment in trading for Golden Tate, haven't paid the dividends that he paid in yesterday's game.
Cowboys, Seahawks, watch this stiff arm from Zeke.
The stiff arm was great. The better part was the very end of the play. Ducking inside instead of outside, understanding time, score, situation, bleeding 40 more seconds off the clock. Great play by Zeke.
Yeah, such a powerful runner, very, very elusive. And you can see right here he has that extra speed, that extra gear to get around. That's what makes him the best runner of the football that we have in the NFL.
Same game, Cowboys threatening. K.J. Wright, though, makes the great interception in the end zone for Seattle.
Mistake by Dak Prescott. You got to lead the wide receiver. You got a wide receiver on a linebacker. Lead him to the pylon. He throws it behind him, and KJ makes an amazing play. That's one thing he can do is cover in space.
Excellent ball skills by KJ Wright. Maybe a little contact a little bit early.
Yeah, wasn't looking back for it.
By the way, the refs letting him play this playoff weekend. Letting him play. Not a lot of illegal contact.
That will be a common thing.
Nick.
Yes.
Drawing a blank?
I'd love to.
Let's do it. Wild card weekend was jam-packed with players putting their team on their back to get the crucial playoff win. So, CC, the best individual performance this weekend was blank.
A lot of good ones, none bigger than Dak Prescott. Nick talked about being the biggest play in Dallas football history since Larry Brown's interception. That third down and 14 conversion. They also ran a quarterback lead in the red zone earlier in the game. His ability to make big plays late in the game, Dak Prescott.
Dak had, without question, the best individual play. The best individual performance I'm going to give to his running back, Zeke. 30 touches, 169 yards, a critical play at the end of the first half on their first touchdown drive. Third and short, pops it outside for 44 yards. The play we just showed you, and then additionally, this is the play we just showed you, and then the touchdown after Dak's big run. Zeke was, well, he was Zeke. He was spectacular throughout the game. To me, he had the best game of anybody this weekend.
All right, moving on. Playoff football, what does that mean? It means teams need a well-rounded game. And what does that game plan look like? Well, it means your offense, your defense, and your special teams all chip in to help your team advance. So, Nick, the most impressive team performance from Wild Card Weekend was blank.
To me, it's the team that won their game in the first 20 minutes of their game, the Indianapolis Colts. They ran the ball for 150-plus yards on a team that hadn't given up a 100-yard rusher all season. Mm-hmm. Andrew Luck didn't make hardly any mistakes. They made Deshaun Watson look like a young, inexperienced quarterback. The Colts were dominant on both sides of the ball. I'm going to give it to Andy.
I'm going to go with the L.A. Chargers. They dominated Baltimore. People were calling for Flacco. Adrian Phillips, the safety who played inside the cavity to be able to come up with this great defense, seven DBs. Gus Bradley and Anthony Lynn, the coach, came up with. Derwin James playing from sideline to sideline. What they did to the Baltimore Ravens and taking them out of that, I thought was the most dominant performance this weekend.
All right. Wild card weekend wasn't glamorous for every team involved, with the Texans, Seahawks, and Ravens and Bears all seeing their seasons come to an end. CC, the team you were most surprised to see get eliminated this weekend was blank.
The Bears. The Bears came into the playoffs rolling, playing at home. That defense we thought could be the most frightening defense, or could be the defense especially to be able to slow down the Saints and that offense. Not able to get the kick there at the end. There's no need for them to be disappointed. As a young football team with no experience, I believe this experience will be valuable going forward. They get that kick to go through, it's a whole different story in the playoffs this year.
Or they get the two-point conversion after their touchdown, potentially, whole different story.
That hurt.
That was a critical play that I don't think enough attention was paid to. I say the Bears as well. I thought the Bears were going to the NFC Championship game. I thought they were the second-best team in the NFC and a team that had a real chance to actually win the Super Bowl based on a great defense, good running game, and a quarterback who we saw it at the end can make all the throws. Now, he also can make some bad decisions, but the Bears, to be one and done, to lose to a 9-7 Eagles team, they hadn't lost a game all year when they allowed fewer than 24 points. They allowed 16 and lost. That's a stomach punch. The Bears, the one surprised me the most.
All right, with Wild Card Weekend now in the books, we can shift focus to the divisional round, where each team will look to continue their road to the Super Bowl. So, Nick, the divisional round matchup you're most excited to watch next weekend is blank.
I'm going to remove where I'm from this. Just as a football fan, as a guy that watches the whole league, Eagles Saints, because the storylines are spectacular. We are either going to get Drew Brees one step away from reaching the Super Bowl and really having the cementing moment of his career, or the Nick Foles magical carpet ride continues. One of these two things is going to happen. So for that reason, Eagles Saints is the most compelling matchup of the week.
I think the Colts and the way the Colts have played, you've had the surprising numbers as far as this Colts defense being number one in the league since
week seven.
Since week number seven, Andrew Luck resurrecting his career. Frank Wright going into Kansas City. They got a lot of nightmares. Kansas City fans are terrified. I thought this was the worst matchup because I believe that Luck and that ball control, Marlon Mack, that they can get that Chiefs team playing at a faster pace because they're not going to have the normal possessions.
All right, let's end with the college football national title game. That's taking place tonight. Two undefeated teams squaring off in Alabama and Clemson. NFL prospects all over the field. Chris Carter, the player you are most looking forward to seeing tonight.
I'm going to go on the defensive side, Jenna, and Quentin Williams, the defensive tackle. He could be the number one pick in the draft. He's a space eater that can also put pressure on the quarterback. He's number 92 wearing crimson and tie tonight. Looking forward to seeing if he can get after your guy, Lawrence, the quarterback, the Sunshine.
Sunshine, that's my pick, Trevor Lawrence. We've seen this matchup three straight years now. This will be the fourth straight year. But the first two times, Deshaun Watson was playing quarterback for Clemson. Then it was Kelly Bryant. And as great as Deshaun is, we haven't seen a guy, a true pocket passer, the way Trevor Lawrence is. And we've obviously never seen a quarterback playing for Alabama the way Tua is. This could be a vertical passing game. I'm excited to see if Trevor Lawrence can keep up with Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, I believe Clemson defense is able to get to Tua. I believe we're also going to see Jalen Hurt. Tua still has that ankle bothering him. So I believe both Alabama quarterbacks are going to play in tonight's game.
All right, that'll be a fun one to watch. Got to take a break. Coming up, what was the key to the Cowboys taking down the Seahawks? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories, and we get you started right here on First Things First. Catch it all Monday through Friday only on FS1. Time now for us to go viral. So the Eagles' late touchdown gave them the lead with under a minute to play. And with the Bears trying for a game-winning field goal to advance, English-Spanish play-by-play announcer Ricky Ricardo was on the call.
Pie de Cody Parkey. 43 yardas. El snap. Le mete el pie. Distancia, dirección. Le dio el poste. No, falló. No, señor. Los Eagles se van con la victoria. ¡Ay, papá! No, señor. Chicago. No.
That was great.
Fantastic. If you think they just get into soccer.
Al Michaels is a legend. A legend. But he could learn something from my man. You said it was Ricky Ricardo?
Yes.
Was that that was great. You know what it reminds me of? Gus Johnson calling college basketball, but in Spanish, of course. But that was great.
Gus is pretty special.
No, senor. No, sir. But that was great.
Kicker the kicker.
That was great. That in Spanish wouldn't have rhymed, so it wouldn't have worked. But that was a great call. That was a great call.
All right, time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. So college football national title game, that's tonight. It's Alabama and Clemson facing off for the third time in 4 years. Chris, what's the key to Clemson upsetting Alabama?
Well, Clemson's got what Dabo Swinney calls his best offensive line since he's been on this run. I believe that their ability to try to keep the football and be able to run the football. You can't be one-dimensional against Alabama. They have too many rushers, too much speed on their defense. So people will talk about Clemson and their defensive front, but I believe Clemson, their offensive line, and as you said, Nick, for the first time, a pure drop-back quarterback to go against that Bama defense.
You said, right, Trevor Lawrence, a freshman who replaced Kelly Bryant at the beginning of this year. You mentioned people are going to talk about their defensive line. I'm one of those people. That Clemson, even without Dexter Lawrence, who's out with suspension, they've got three first-round picks playing defensive line in this game. Can they disrupt Tua Tagovailoa, who's not at full strength? As well as he played in the semifinal, he's not at full strength. That'll be a key to this matchup.
All right, let's move on to Wild Card Weekend. The Colts took down the Texans 21-7 to advance to the divisional round. Andrew Luck finished with 222 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. Nick, what was the most impressive aspect of the Colts' win?
Everything. Just the way they dominated this game from the opening kickoff and ended it. I mean, it was past the sticks time at 21-0 halfway through the second quarter.
What is past the sticks?
That's mean? A Madden. That's a video game reference. If you get down 21-0 in a video game, you pass the sticks, meaning your turn's over, next guy's up. Oh. Our young people watching understand it. Don't worry about that. See, I got you on this.
Well, it's more importantly that I understand.
That you understand.
I happen to be on the show. Sorry. My name is on the show compared to the little chicklets out there. Hey, they know. Don't worry
about
it, Chris.
Every part about it was very impressive. impressive, most notably the way they jumped out on the Texans and took the crowd out of this game from the very beginning.
We saw teams, Seattle and Baltimore, who have somewhat a very similar style as Indy. They wanted to be more physical. They weren't able to establish their style. The most impressive thing was Indy did what got them into this game. They dictated through the running game, play action with Luck, being careful with the ball, keeping him clean. Mm-hmm. That's what's turned this franchise around.
All right, let's stick with this game. Deshaun Watson finished with 235 passing yards, a touchdown, an interception, and 76 yards on the ground in the losing effort. With the quarterback saying he would grow from this moment, Nick, what did we learn about Deshaun and the Texans and their loss team?
I think we learned more about the Texans than Deshaun. This was Deshaun's worst game as a pro, worse than any game he had at Clemson. I don't think it's fair to say, the moment was too big for him. I think it was you're down to one wide receiver and he was injured. The Colts D-line dominated the Texans' offensive line. The Texans had no rushing attack whatsoever. What I learned about the Texans is this offseason, with all that cap money and finally having their own picks, they need to greatly upgrade the offensive line and potentially call up Le'Veon Bell and see what it costs to bring him down to Houston.
I think them in Seattle, when you look at what happened to them, it's hard to have that type of style unless you have an elite running back. So I think that they look at how can we help protect our quarterback, either protection-wise, bring some of that those resources on that offensive line, and get him an elite runner of the football. I think that's what I learned from this compared to the critique of the quarterback. I believe he is definitely the guy that could lead him to championship. Championships in Houston.
All right, let's end with Phillip Rivers and the Chargers in Baltimore. All eyes on that guy, Lamar Jackson, in his first playoff start, second quarter. Chargers up 6. Lamar's pass picked off. It was a rough first half for him. So rough, the Twitter world was begging for a switch to that guy, Joe Flacco. But the Ravens stuck with Lamar, who halfway through the fourth quarter, 3 of 10, 25 yards, and a 0 quarterback rating. But in the fourth, he found Michael Crabtree to cut the lead to 13. Less than 2 minutes to go, he found Crabtree again. And this made it a one-score game. I mean, it did take a while, but it would eventually be called a touchdown. Lamar would get a shot to win it, but Melvin Ingram recovers the fumble, and that would end the ball game. Chargers win 23-17. Here's Lamar Jackson on his day.
We just played like we didn't want to be here. I did, not my team. I feel like I played poorly. You know, it was a lot of things, you know, we could have did out there on that field to put us in a better situation. Just got to move on now, get ready for next year.
All right, CeCe, what did the Chargers do defensively to shut down Lamar Jackson?
Well, one of the things they did, well, Gus Bradley, he approached Anthony Lynn, the coach, earlier in the week, and he had come up with the scheme that they had used one other time before. They used it late in the season against Kansas City, 2017 season, at the end of the season, because they had a number of linebackers that were injured, and they felt like Kansas City, with the type of speed that they had, that they needed more defensive backs on the field. So he approached Anthony Lynn earlier in the week. Anthony Lynn's initial reaction is, are you crazy? This is my first playoff game. Are you trying to get me fired? But that's one of the things that Anthony Lynn, he has going for him. He's got support on the defensive side with Gus Bradley, his former head coaching experience, and on the offensive side with Ken Whisenhunt, his former being a head coach. So that really helps you as
and
a young coach.
So the scheme that Chris is talking about is they had 7 defensive backs on the field,
yes,
for 57 of the 58 snaps.
Yeah, so they had 2 safeties inside the box playing typically the normal inside linebacker spots in a nickel defense.
And that is, on its face, it was shocking to me, because I would think that, and I guess this is one of the reasons why I'm not a defensive coordinator in the
NFL.
If you want to stop a running team, you add big people, not little people. But what they saw was the part that makes the Ravens running game so dominant is the speed of the quarterback, the threat of the quarterback to run. So you have Derwin James, you can go sideline to sideline with him. You added another safety on the field, Adrian Phillips, right?
Adrian Phillips,
all times.
Yes.
And then you ask your D linemen to do a great job in making sure those offensive linemen can't get up to the second level to where they could just obliterate those small people out there. And maybe it was out of necessity, partially because they had injuries, but also because this is the first time in Lamar Jackson's football career, college or pro, he's faced a team for a second time in a year. So they saw what worked, and most notably what didn't work a few weeks ago when they played, and they made an adjustment, and it totally stifled the Ravens' running attack, which is why they had no offense until a rally late in the game.
There's a couple things that you worry about. if you're going to deploy seven defensive backs on the field all the time, you worry about the linemen getting on top of them and be able to, because with the size, DBs aren't used to. They're used to being in space right. with guys pulling out on them. They're not used to being inside the interior part of the defense. So you got to get penetration into the backfield by the defensive lineman that throws off that offensive line, and these guys have to be able to get sideline to sideline. So that's what you worry about. With a small unit on the field, a conventional NFL offense, if it was Seattle, because Seattle doesn't run their quarterback, they run their running backs predominantly, you can take advantage of. But when your quarterback is maybe 30 to 50% of your rushing attack, you can get away with being smaller because the change of direction, that's what you want smaller players for. And the play action. Gus Bradley thought when they got fooled in play action that the DBs could still get back into coverage. Better than linebackers would be reacting to those play fakes.
So maybe it doesn't work against the Patriots next week. Right. But let's go back and talk a little bit about Lamar Jackson. And we talked about this earlier. There were calls for Joe Flacco to mm-hmm. come in. Where do you stand on whether Harbaugh should have maybe made the turn to Flacco?
I understand why people would be calling for it, because through three quarters, they couldn't have been worse offensively. They kept putting the ball on the ground. Lamar couldn't complete a pass. He went 2 hours. He went from 107 Eastern time to 307 Eastern time between completions. So I get it. But Joe Flacco was not going to come in and save the day. And going to Flacco, what it would have done in my eyes, is set back the development of the future of your franchise. Joe Flacco was awful his first playoff start. He was awful his fourth playoff start. He was awful in the playoffs a lot early in his career. They allowed him to work through it. Now, they were winning those games because the defense had play better, but I don't think you could have gone to Flacco and then said, but Lamar's our guy in the future. I think it would have stunted that.
Yeah, when you spend that first round pick, when you trade to get back into the first round, you realize he's going to be the future unless it's a total collapse. Now, I've been alive long enough, and I've also covered the league long enough I've covered when we came on the TV and said, hey, you think the Ravens should replace Joe Flacco? Also, before they had the Mile High Miracle, Flacco was not very, very good in that game. So there have been times where the Baltimore fans were calling for the quarterback. Right. Now, they had that great defense, and they end up winning a Super Bowl. So Flacco, yes, he's kind of a made man, like we say with Eli Manning. But for the future of the franchise, and the reason why they end up having a special season was because they came up with a running attack where they were going to run these RPOs and this version of how we can be physical. You can't run that with Joe Flacco being in the game. So offensively, they are not a throw the ball down the field. They don't have the wide receivers to be able to support that. So Harbaugh did the right thing. Their future is in Lamar Jackson. They stuck with their future in this game.
And I thought it was great, just quickly, that Jimmy Smith, the corner for the Ravens, when the fans were calling yeah. for Flacco, literally went to the fans and said, how do you think we got here? So even the players on the team know that Lamar Jackson, his ability to run, was a huge reason they even got into the tournament and won the division. It's a really rough game for him.
Especially since Joe Flacco is most likely not going to be there, Harbaugh said after the yep. game. Look, he's going to be playing
be
for someone. Exactly. Yep. So they knew that they were going to move on. All right, let's move on to Dallas and Seattle. Here we go. There's Dak Prescott. A lot of eyes on him. Cowboys down 4 in the fourth. Prescott with a nice pass to Amari Cooper. 34-yard gain for Dak, the longest pass of the day. 4 plays later, Ezekiel Elliott runs in the 1-yard score. Dallas up 3. All right, let's fast forward. Less than 3 minutes to go. 3rd and 14. Big play for Dak Prescott, and he runs for the first down all the way to the 1-yard line with a flip. That made my little one proud. Next play, runs it in for the score. He was thrilled, Cowboys thrilled, and that guy who has backed Dak Prescott all season long, Jerry Jones, was thrilled. Cowboys pull out the 24-22 win. Here is Dak after his first playoff victory.
This team, everything we've been through, we had so much confidence coming to the game, and our confidence remains. I mean, we just played a great, great Seattle team. Just honestly, it's just all about the way we fall, the way we compete through success and adversity. Proud of our guys.
Can we talk about the way this guy fought on 3rd down, running it for 16 yards to get the 1st down and then set up the touchdown? I mean, what were you thinking when you saw him take off?
Simple. He's a grown man. That's what it is. That's how he played today, and he led us to this win.
All right, CC, what was it? How were the Cowboys able to win this one?
This is part of Dak's overall development. To me, We have to be careful in trying to analyze quarterbacks because everyone's not going to be Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger. They're going to drop back in the pocket. You know where they're going to be, and they're going to deliver the ball, deliver strikes. You're going to have to be able to win a number of different ways. I think Russell Wilson has done that on a high, high level. Most of the time, guys, they're not able to do it on a high level. But I believe with this offensive line, with the Ezekiel Elliott, with Amari Cooper, with this collection of players, this is the type of quarterback that Dak Prescott should be. He should be. Forget what people say. Man, is he a dropback? Man, win the game. Do I have to run? Do I have to throw? He's a dual threat. He puts fear into the defense. He made great decision making. He didn't hold on to the ball, which he had done all this regular season. And late in the game, when it counted the most, not only from an offensive philosophy standpoint, supported by the offensive coordinator and the head coach, man, they ran quarterback lead draw. Third and 14. This is not a third and 14 play, but Dak made up his mind. It wasn't blocked great. It was blocked good. The tight end on the left-hand side, he misses a block on Bobby Wagner, but he makes up his mind, I'm getting ready to split these defenders and try to go get this first down. And that right there was the biggest play that I saw this weekend. Dak making up his mind that when I have to run, I'm going to run, be smart with the football. That will be the legacy of Dak Prescott going forward.
And that play right there is the biggest play anyone in a Cowboys uniform has made since Larry Brown intercepted Neil O'Donnell to ice Super Bowl 30. I mean, if they don't pick this up, if Bobby Wagner, the single best middle linebacker in football, makes that tackle, which he would on the vast majority of quarterbacks who aren't as big and powerful as Dak, they are kicking a field goal, and all of a sudden, 2 minutes left, Russell Wilson down six, and Seattle says, this is why we've called the game the way we did. A game that I thought they should have passed more, but said, you know what, the reason why we were just run, we thought we'd get the ball in our guy's hands down less than a score and have him go win it for us. And this is the best-case scenario win for the Cowboys. Best case. Because they won exactly what their identity is. Zeke was the best player on the field.
Yep. Not phenomenal, but what we expect.
Absolutely. 130 touches, 169 yards. Yeah. Dak made a couple huge plays. In the passing game, the big star was Amari Cooper. And their defensive front seven annihilated Seattle. Like, what the quarterback we've talked about is Dak, a combination of Cam Newton and Jared Goff. You know the quarterback he reminded me of yesterday? Steve McNair. A guy that didn't wow you a ton with his arm, but could make the throws, and in the most critical spot says, I don't have to run past you. I can run through you. And that's what he did in the biggest play of the Cowboys season on that third and 14.
So this is the Cowboys, and this is, for better or worse, the best you're going to see of the Cowboys because they were playing exactly true to their identity. Is this a team that can go out and beat the Rams playing like that?
Well, man, that missed field goal, you're talking about a fortuitous bounce. Compared to going to New Orleans facing the Saints, where would you rather go? I'd much rather go to that leaky Rams defense that can be run on. I'd much rather be in the L.A. Coliseum with all those Dallas fans from Southern California compared to being in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Oh, no, Dallas, this is the matchup that Dallas wanted. This is the type of team the Dallas Cowboys, they could take apart the Rams. So, yes, this is great for the Dallas Cowboys. Their overall physicality, winning playoff games like this, Tony Romo only won two playoff games. He's halfway there. And Jason Garrett, the key that he is now, that he won't be facing by getting that playoff win, I think that gives this team tremendous confidence moving forward.
And it gives them a chance. You don't ever get to permanently actually erase history, but you can make up for a little bit. There was a team that was 13-3 that had a home divisional round playoff game, and they squandered that opportunity against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Now you have a team that started 3-5. That was left for dead by everyone after that Monday Night Football loss. If they then turn this season, the year they started 3-5, into their trip to the NFC Championship game, which if Nick Foles helps them out again, that would be in Dallas.
Yep. Yes.
That's a game that could be in Dallas. Like then all of a sudden you're talking about really special stuff. The Cowboys deserve a ton of credit for beating a Super Bowl-tested team like the Seahawks the way they did.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.